Let's go.
Put your hard hats on, people. Let's go in there. We're gonna do a candle meditation again. As you know, I like it's something you can do with an open eye if you choose. Leo's about to bring up the candle there. And I think we're gonna do the 1, 2, 3, 4 meditation and then do silence with it. And if you recall what that means, it's on the in breath, think one. And on the out breath, think two. On the in breath, think one. On the out breath, think two. So I'm going to start it by saying these numbers out loud. I don't go above four because we don't want to lose count and start thinking about counting. The point is to just keep your eyes, if you choose, on the flickering candles and let it take you where it takes you. And if you find it taking you off on a tangent somewhere, gently bring yourself back to the counting. And so I'll start us off with the counting and then I'll go silent for a bit. And first let's affirm something. Christ in me is awake now. Those of you who care to affirm that with you, because remember the Christ is our memory of God, our memory of love, our memory of wisdom, what have you. So the Christ in me is awake now. Take a breath. Now have the thought. On the in-breath, one. On the out-breath, two. On the in-breath, three. On the out-breath, four. One. Two. Three. Four. Let's just do it silently now. One, two, three, four, one, two, three, four. So let us know that new things have been revealed while we have been counting, while we've been observing the flickering flames, while we have been in meditation. So knowing this, being assured, let's bring our journey back here to this sanctuary, this place called Unity. And as we come back, let us come back refreshed, renewed, fully aware of the good that has just taken place, that we may say thank you and amen. Great. And now let's welcome Karen Mason.
When it all comes true, just the way you planned. It's funny, but the bells don't ring. It's a quiet thing. you'd hear the choir sing. It's a quiet thing. There are no exploding fireworks. Where's the roaring of the crowd? Maybe it's this strange new atmosphere, way up here among the clouds. But I don't hear the drums. I don't hear the band. The sounds I'm told such moments.
Yay, Karen. That was from her act at Studio 54, or 54 Below, it's called. Hey, everybody. Welcome to October, and I'm glad we're together today, and I haven't spoken here in a while, and so I'm really happy to share my story with you all. In September, I went away for 10 days of silence. It was called Vipassana, and I... Show of hands, who here has done Vipassana? Of course, I have no idea who has. And I've only done it this one way, which is a 10-day course up in an ashram up in Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. And this was my fifth time. And each time it's been different, and each time it has been hard. Now, it's never been as hard as it was the first time. Because the first time, I had no idea what was coming next. And so many sensations. The definition, I want to read you the definition of Vipassana, and I read it because I want to get it right. It's a meditation involving concentration on the body or its sensations or the insight which this provides. So it's focusing on it. It's not defining it. It's not defining the sensations. It's not defining what's going on in the body. It's observing. And that's very difficult to do because we're used to labeling everything. Oh, this means this, and this means this, and this means this. And we go, oh, I have a headache. I have a headache because... But what if you have a sensation in your body and it's just a sensation? What if you have a sensation in your head, your foot, your whatever, and it's just a sensation? You know, you're going through, you're observing, and you feel a blockage, and it's just a blockage. Many years ago, I used to lead the 12-power meditation that I do twice a week for Unity of New York when we were on 30th Street. I did it on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I the small circle group. And things were happening in my body as a result. I was getting this buzz or this vibration, we'll call it, in my lower regions, we'll say. And David, at the same time, was getting a similar thing in him. Now, David, well, I can say it. He says it. He's a hypochondriac. But I thought, oh, my chakras are opening. My powers are opening because I was doing this meditation so frequently. David, when it started happening with him, was sure he was having an aortic aneurysm. And it's like we interpret things differently. If you've read his book, The Thought Exchange, which is all about sensations, overcoming your resistance to living a sensational life, the book, the Thought Exchange, overcoming. And so to not resist these sensations, but to simply observe them. And with Vipassana, and I'll go into big greater detail here in a moment, but the point is to eradicate all craving, all aversion, and our ignorance. And I'll tell you, my first time there, I discovered I have a great aversion to discomfort. Because if you're sitting on the floor 10 hours a day meditating, your legs crossed, you might become uncomfortable. And I found I have a great craving for comfort. Yeah. So we're sitting here. Oh, and then I got to go to here, and then I got to go to here, and then I got to do this, and then it's going to scratch this. That's our discomfort trying to get comfortable. And it was my ignorance, and still is in many ways, that if I could just get comfortable, I won't be uncomfortable. And it leads for an exhausting existence. Those of you who understand know it. And I invite you to pay attention to that. How often do you cross your legs, uncross them? You got to move this way. You got to do this. You got to smoke a cigarette. You got to eat something. You got to just to do something to leave this moment to try to create a new moment that hopefully will make you comfortable. So anyway, the first time I ever heard about Vipassana, a friend of David's was here at our house, and she was talking about it, and I thought, that's for me. 10 days of silence. That's all I heard, really. I couldn't conceive of what Vipassana was, even if she had explained it. I just heard 10 days meditating in the silence, away. No phones, no. I thought, that is for me. I have to do this. And so I went on their website, the Vipassana Meditation Center up in Massachusetts, and I booked. I'll tell you, it was a September. I've always gone in September. It's a good time of the year for me, but they have courses throughout the year. And you have to get on a waiting list half the time unless you sign up right on the day the course opens up. And it's like a few months in advance of the course. So anyway, they don't even charge for this. They put you up in a decent room. They have like 64 rooms for men. I don't know how many they have for women. Men and women are kept separate, segregated, either through meals, through meditation. In the meditation hall, we're all in the same room, but the women are all over there and the men are all over here. And right now they're running at about 60% capacity because of COVID and what have you, and we have to wear masks. But anyway, so I signed up for this thing. And, so they don't charge. And you get your room. They feed you. And I'm not a vegetarian, but I ate the most delicious vegetarian menu every day. It's all cooked and served by volunteers. I never thought I would enjoy some of this type of food so much as I do. Even the oatmeal with the hot prunes every morning and the banana on top. My gosh, I was happy to be back there because I haven't been there since 2019. So the first night is when we go into the silence, and we had our early meal. And first year I met this guy who had done it like 19 times, and I felt like I had a pal there the whole time, even though we never looked at each other once. We never had a meaningful smile, anything, but I knew I had somebody there willing that I complete this course. Despite the fact that every single day, as I walked around the forest there, I knew cars were parked on the other side, I would click my keys just to hear beep, beep. So I knew my car was there and ready to go if I needed to run. And somehow I stayed that whole time the first time. So ever since then, I've always looked for newcomers on that first day before we go into the silence at the first meal, just to let them know I'm there on their side. I said, we'll never look at each other. We'll never laugh together. We won't hold doors for each other. We won't have meals together. But just know, I'm here. And I'm 100% willing that you complete this. And the course in 2019, a guy came up to me at the end and he said, Sean, did you look at me and smile at me the other day? And I said, not that I'm aware of. And he said, it was my hardest day and I was so ready to leave. And when I saw you look at me and smile, it's what let me stay. And I thought, that's what we do. We support each other. Now, I'd swear to you, I never looked at him and smiled. But I did notice the guys around and things. And this time we couldn't make that connection beforehand because we were in masks and we were assigned our own individual eating table this time. So mine faced a wall. So I never got to meet anybody before we went into the silence. And that's okay. So in that opportunity, I learned new things this time. The very first night I was sitting, I have to use a chair at this point. I can't sit on the floor anymore. It's too hard for my knees. But I So I sat there and one of my first thoughts was, I'm going to go through this time instead of get through it. And I realized, oh, in the past, so many of the sits I have had to, I'm going to get through this. I'm not, let's just get through this. Let's just get through this. And this time I wanted to go through it. And I've had many revelations over the years, so many things that occurred to me, and everybody I ever know or have ever met comes to visit me in my head during this time. As anybody who knows about meditation isn't about, oh, I'm just going to sink right in. And a lot of people won't meditate because they think, I think too much, I am not doing it. But the art of meditation is to bring yourself back into the meditation. Now, the funny part about Vipassana, oh, it's hysterical. There is no reading. There is no writing. There is no music. There is no prayer. There is no yoga. There is no strenuous exercise. There is nothing to take you out of it. You are there to do Vipassana. And each day it deepens a little bit. There's instructions. We have a discourse every night on video by a man named S.N. Goenka, who's no longer with us. But all the centers are given the discourse by Goenka. He was the head guy from India for a long, long time. But they don't want the local teachers, because there's a teacher sitting on a box to help guide us too. But they don't want any local people reinterpreting or watering down or giving us new information. They want us doing it the pure Vipassana. And Goenka is a funny man. He's like Jackie Mason up there on the video. But every night, he's pointing out so much stuff that we teach in Unity, you know, the way we think and our crazy thinking and our all that stuff. And so to look at that, to listen to it, and we're allowed to laugh. Nobody tells you can't laugh. But otherwise, we're not talking to each other at all. But so I wanted to go through this. Well, I went through it. The first night, I stuck my mask in my eye. Ow. But I got through that. 2 days later, I opened a door over my foot. Now, we're in the noble silence this whole time. It's what it's called, noble silence. Do not break the noble silence. I broke the noble silence when I ran that door over my foot. Fortunately, no one was around to hear me. I had sandals on and a pair of socks, but that wasn't enough for this heavy door. Oh, man, I said some words. Fortunately, it was right outside. I said some words that were not noble or silent, and not one person was around to hear me. So I didn't disturb anyone else's peace. Now, here's an important thing that I learned also, because I'm only on here for a certain amount of time today. We can go into it more in the future if you want. But this probably was the most profound teaching. Now, the same teachings happen every time, but we hear it differently every time, or we hear it for the first time each time. And this teaching was, take no notice of what your brother is doing. Not because it was all men that I was with. It was fine to say your brother. It could be your sister, whatever. But in this case, these are my brothers. And it said, take no notice. They may not be in the same place you are. And so if they are not paying attention, if they are not doing it perfect, take no notice. Do not let their journey limit your journey or mitigate your journey. You know, if they're out there exercising, if they're out in the middle of we have a little walking path, and they're out there doing high kicks, take no notice. If they're not doing it the way you wish they would do it, take no notice. You know, unless they're hurting someone, but take no notice. And I thought, oh, that's a valuable teaching, because let's face but it also means take no notice of the ones who are doing it amazingly well. And there were some guys there. I don't understand how they would just sink right down onto their little cushion there. And they, excuse me. And they would go right in. I often have my eyes open when you're supposed to be closed. There are three sits a day where they really ask you, hey, keep your eyes closed, your hands folded, your feet folded. I don't think I've ever made it more than 20 minutes. Maybe this time I did a few at 45 minutes. But nevertheless, for those 1 hour, but I'd see these guys, I was like, how do they do that? First of all, how do they sit on the floor that much without squirming? I just, boy, they're into this. They must practice all year long, and I don't, I'll be honest with you. But I would look around and I'd see people, oh, yeah, this, they're on their little benches, they're falling off their benches. Because it's vegetarian, there's a lot of body noises, there's a lot of coughing and sneezing and so much. And I would think, I'm not in competition with these people. Take no notice. Take no notice. And I thought, how do I apply that to my life when people aren't doing it the way I think they ought to? How often have we thought, that's not fair that they get away with that and I don't? Well, that's not your journey. Your journey is your journey. Do you have an honorable journey? Are you in alignment? I mean, the code of discipline there, I love it. It's to abstain from killing any being, to abstain from stealing, to abstain from all sexual activity, to abstain from telling lies, and to abstain from all intoxicants. And you'd think for 10 days that'd be easy enough, wouldn't you? But it's impressive how many of those things you were tempted to do. Remember my first time there? Back then they had tents outside, tents and cabins, and some rooms. They didn't have all the rooms built yet. And I was very clear. I said, if I'm not to kill anything, I have to sleep indoors. I have to have an indoor room. You can't put me outside with the bugs and everything and not to kill any living thing. I don't know that I could do that. They fine. They want you to succeed at this. This is another thing I learned. They want us to succeed. They want us. They want to make it as easy as possible because they know the discipline is so difficult. That first year at the end, on the final Saturday, the 10th day, I remember a guy was outside. We could talk. We broke the noble silence on Saturday morning, even though we don't leave till Sunday. And one guy was saying, man, when I got here and I saw those rooms and stuff, if I hadn't had a tent, I would have left. And I thought, oh, so his prosperity is a tent. My prosperity was a room with a bathroom. And it makes a difference. So anyway, yeah, you get a room with your private bath and everything is a rule. And so with this getting quiet and getting quiet and coming back to getting quiet. So they wake you up at 4 in the morning to be a meditation by 4:30 in the morning. And you meditate hopefully from 4:30 to 6:30. And at 6:30 is breakfast. Delicious for me breakfast, oatmeal, prunes, what have you, little cereals and things. And tea. I don't think they had coffee. I don't drink coffee, but didn't pay attention. And then 6:30 till 8 is breakfast. 8 o'clock is that first 1 hour where they want you sitting with your hands folded, your eyes closed, your ankles. And you go that till 9. And then you get a 5-minute break. And then you come back for instructions on what to do in the morning. And till 11. And the instructions are whether or not you're going to meditate in the hall where you will be interviewed by the teacher, or you're allowed to go back to your room or into what I'll call the pagoda. We're not going to explain it today. It's a thing in the back. It's beautiful. It's a big ashram, but people get private cells. Those who are old students get those. I'm an old student. It has nothing to do with my age. But you have that option, or you have to stay there if they tell you do. And then and you're set for 11 o'clock is your lunch, which is the last meal of the day. Imagine that. And it's a beautiful, delicious, simple vegetarian lunch. Again, with tea to drink, but there's selections and choices, and they're so good. And then you have till 1 o'clock for free time. And at 1 o'clock, you're back into meditation. They're ringing the gong. And that you can do in your room or in the hall. You're on your own until 2:30. 2:30 to 3:30, back the 1 hour. And then 3:30 till 5, you're either in the hall or they set you free. You can go to your room or whatever. And then at 5 o'clock, you have tea. Tea. New students may have a piece of fruit if they so choose. Old students may have tea. I always gave myself permission. I feel like I'm an adult. If I need a piece of fruit, I'm going to have a piece of fruit. But I've never needed it. I've never been hungry. I've always just loved my tea with some honey in it. And then 6 o'clock, the next 1 hour. 7 o'clock is the discourse. And then a last half hour sit together in the hall. And 9 o'clock into bed. And it gets lonely. And then it gets quiet. And then it gets lonely again. And then it gets boring. And then it gets exciting. And then it gets whatever. The problem is you can't share it with anybody. You can't, it's a quiet thing. And I looked up quiet, and I got the word Selah, S-E-L-A-H, which it's funny, it's a biblical word. But I looked it up on Google, and the word has no definitive meaning, but it's used 74 times in the Bible, mostly in Psalms. And some people think it's the mark of, note of music, what have you. But on Truth Unity and the Unity definition, a metaphysical dictionary, it says tranquil, secure, at rest, silence, pause, quiet, state of mind. Because the reason I looked up Selah is because in the Buddhist ethics, and we use this word a lot, Selah, but it's spelled S-I-L-A, and it's part of the noble eightfold path. I have to read that because I do. And it's a code of conduct that embraces a commitment to harmony and self-restraint, with the principal motivation being nonviolence or freedom from causing harm. It's been described as virtue, moral discipline. It's an internal, aware, and intentional ethical behavior, Selah, according to one's commitment to the path of liberation. It's an ethical compass within self and relationships, rather than what is associated with the English word morality. It means obedience, a sense of obligation. Imagine, so if we were to walk a moral path, because I'm not trying to convert anybody to Buddhism, it deepened in me that Buddha is not a person. Christ is not a person. These are consciousnesses. You know, it's a Christ consciousness, a Buddha consciousness, and it means essentially the same thing. And it is the path into all healing, all morality, with a lack of judgment. Now, as I sit there, by the fourth day, you're in Vipassana, and you're observing your sensations. I can't teach it. I'm not qualified to teach Vipassana, but just, you know, you're observing sensations, but it's over and over and over again. But as I observe without naming them, without giving them meaning, there's no cause for resistance to them. There's no cause for blame. There's no disconnect from the world or my family, which is the human race. And so I don't have to be mad at the human race. I could just take no notice when somebody is living less than. And that's tough for us in our political climate to take no notice. How ridiculous. But if I take notice, I've got to look at, what am I thinking? And am I thinking it so that we could eradicate this kind of behavior, or so that I can stay mad at people and stay victimized in my world, in our world, and the world we live in? I mean, I've said it so many times. What if we became willing that all these beings, including ourselves, become joy-filled? Let's face it, joy-filled people don't hurt other people. And so in that quiet thing, when it all comes true, when love comes true, when peace comes true, when joy comes true in our consciousness, in our cells, in our body, we're not going to be worried about sickness anymore. We're not going to be worried about war anymore. We're not going to be worried. We don't have to worry, but we don't know that yet. And so we have to pay attention. So I'm going to read this one last thing. And it, you know, comes from my favorite book here, The Holy Spirit's Interpretation of the New Testament. And this comes from Luke chapter 16. And you can get this book on Amazon. I do recommend it. But Luke chapter 16 says, there are, verse 1 starts with, there are many questions that will come into your mind as you follow this path with me, meaning Spirit. You will often wonder what is right to do and what is wrong to do. And you will feel confusion and worry within your mind. And let me remind you that confusion and worry are not of spirit. They are resistance. And so you may rejoice that you do not need to listen to them. When confusion and worry are upon you, simply rest and let them pass. When you are feeling peaceful and joyous again, do whatever comes into your mind for you to do. Let me address this concept of right and wrong now, for these concepts lead to confusion. Do you not notice that right and wrong are judgments? Have I not asked you to lay aside judgment? Do not worry that you will be wrong in something that you do. Remember, I have told you that you will only have two experiences on this path. Do you remember when I've read that before? That was from page 153 here in Luke, chapter 15, I think, or maybe 14. But you only have two experiences while you are walking this earth. Willingness, or this path, I should say. Willingness and resistance. Two experiences. Willingness and resistance. Choose with willingness and you will feel joyful and all things will be helpful. Choose with resistance and you have only chosen delay. Okay, we come to unity, we come to church, we study our books that we may experience the peace that we are promised, the love that we are promised, the joy that we are promised, the intelligence that we are promised. We come here to read, to study, to practice so that our life may be enveloped by it, may be fully filled by all these things we are promised. Let's choose willingness to experience them. Let us no longer say, but I can't until you stop being disruptive. That's the word I want. No, I can stop being disruptive right here, right now. And I can choose for peace. I can choose for joy. I can choose for love. I can choose for wisdom, intelligence, power, presence. I can choose for all of that today by choosing for the willingness to be within the love of God. So pay attention to this. I suggest you go back and listen to this talk. I suggest you look up certain terms and embrace them and look into it and get that quiet thing going, so that you can make a joyful noise safely. Thank you very much, and let's listen to Karen Mason again.
When trumpets were mellow, and every gal only had one fellow, no need to remember when, 'cause everything old is new again. Dancing at your Long Island Jazz Age party, waiter, bring some more Bacardi. We'll order now what they ordered then, 'cause everything old is new again. Get out your white suit, your tap shoes and tails. Let's go backwards when forward fails. And movie stars you thought were long dead, now we're framed beside your bed. Don't throw the past away, you might need it some rainy day. Dreams can come true again when everything old is new again. Now's the time to get out your tap shoes and tails. Let's go backwards when all else fails. Leave Greta Garbo alone and be a movie star on your own. Don't throw the past away, you might need a summer rainy day. Dreams can come true again for me and you again when everything old is new.